Hello, hello, my lovelies. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. How y'all doing? Hope everyone is doing great and kicking fall. We are officially into fall and kicking fall into high gear. Again, we are a podcast all about careers in music. We talk to the movers and shakers and innovators all about their careers in music, how they got their music job, how they faced the obstacles that they faced, the risks they took, how they were able to innovate and take their career to the next level. We have got it all here. We can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podcasts. We're also on TuneIn Radio and iHeartRadio. So if you are listening to us on one of those featured streaming platforms, we would love it if you would give us some stars, show us some love, maybe leave a review, say, you guys suck, or you guys are great, but help us at least get up in the rankings so we can help more people, spread the word about this podcast, especially for people that are really looking for a career in music and just don't know where to start, because we have the solutions right here, thanks to my amazing and wonderful guests. So speaking of wonderful guests, last week I had the wonderful pleasure of interviewing Simon Tam. He is the founder of The Slants. He is what I would call a music thought leader. He is all about thinking outside the box. He is all about looking for that niche, looking at niche marketing, how to promote his band, his projects to the next level. He's also a very successful podcaster. Music Business Hacks is the name of his podcast, so I urge you to subscribe to that. And he's also got a number of very popular books all about the music industry and how to hack the music biz. So you can check that out on Amazon. Again, it's Simon Tam, T-A-M. So my guest this week, very excited to chat with Day Bogan. He is a musician. He is a music industry professional. He is an educator, and he describes himself as a serial entrepreneur. He is going to walk us through every step of his incredible career and how he started all of his music businesses, that's plural, starting out at a very young age performing with his family and then promoting and managing other artists in his teens and moving out to LA with literally the clothes on his back and a suitcase and a big old dream, like many of us do, coming to LA, and what led to all of his success in the music biz, his creation of Tune Registry, of joining the faculty at the UCLA Herb Alpert School of Music, and so much more. So one of Day's favorite artists is John Legend. So I'm actually going to play a track off of John Legend's brand new album, Darkness and Light. Here is Overload featuring Miguel.
Oh, when I was your user, your FaceTime abuser, dose after dose till we crashed. Now they bet on our game, say we'll go down in flames. It's too good, or it never could last. But oh, we was undercover till it overflowed, overexposed. Oh, chained our love together, never took it slow. And now we know life on overload. Don't we always
hey,
make a show?
Thank you for joining me on Here, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I know you're a busy guy, so very appreciative you could make the time. Let's start with childhood. Tell me about your first memories of music. What do you remember in your household growing up?
Well, I actually grew up in a very musical family. My dad was a musician, played multiple instruments. Also was a music entrepreneur, so he worked with artists and had his own music company representing artists and trying to build and grow the careers of artists that he discovered. My mom comes from a very musical family as well. My grandparents, my grandmother specifically, sang in the church. Her sisters, which are my great, I guess great aunts, also sang in the church. They sang as groups. And my mom has cousins who are singers and musicians and producers. And my grandfather, my dad's side, was a musician. So just very music-oriented family, entertainment-oriented family. I and my brothers started out actually very young in our own little group. And my dad obviously, kind of oversaw us, put us together as a boy group. we would sing as kids and do competitions and talent searches and all that stuff, or talent shows. But as we got older, we kind of spread out a bit, and I focused on singing. I was in choirs in school. That was the primary source of training, being in a cappella choir and being in the kind of what I guess would be considered kind of the honors choir, which is magical singers in middle school and high school. So I knew early on I was, you know, very interested in being an aspiring artist. I wanted to, you know, do a lot of the stuff that I saw young artists on TV doing. That was kind of my goal. So my family really supported that. You know, my dad especially, you know, really wanted to help us pursue a career in the music industry. My mom wanted us to focus on education. So there's a couple opportunities that we didn't really take because they would have probably put us a little bit off course academically. But yeah, I grew up in a musical family. I remember at family gatherings, like family reunions, as well as celebrations of life. My mom's cousins would, you know, sing multi-part harmonies and groups, gospel songs, and just in general around the house, mom would sing, you know, R&B songs and pop songs from artists that she liked. So, and you grew up in my house, you hear my brothers rapping, you hear me singing, and my sister singing, just as we just walked through the house. So it was a very musical family.
I love that. So that's really interesting, though, that your dad had you guys doing talent shows and that type of thing. Do you feel that, how do I say this? Like, I'm thinking of like the Jackson Five.
Absolutely.
But I'm also thinking of like Mr. Jackson, the father, and you know, his sort of control. I'm just curious, did you feel like sort of a pressure to be in music, or it was just all natural? Like, it was just sort of part of the process?
As far back as I can remember, I've always wanted to be in the music industry. Mm-hmm. I love singing. I think my dad recognized that and used his skills as a music manager to help us, you know, kind of form as a group. And he's a songwriter as well, so he'd write songs for us and put together arrangements and rehearse us. And of course, that's sometimes, you know, he was definitely, you know, wanting to make sure that we were progressing. So, I felt like the Jackson Five, but then kind of the Bogan Three. You know, we'd come along to school and we'd rehearse for some time, and we'll sing in front of music industry professionals and from Cleveland, Ohio. So that was our mark. I remember we sang for Gerald Levert.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. And we had an opportunity to work with his studio. Yeah, I mean, I think there's part pressure, but I think it wasn't necessarily, you know, we weren't coerced into being in music. I think we wanted to be in music, and this was the discipline that came along with it. Mm-hmm. That I appreciate, because that, you know, transcends into what I do today on the business side.
That's very cool. I like that, because it can sometimes go both ways, you know. It can be supportive, right, or it can be, you know.
Right. Especially if someone's not really, like, you have to be passionate about the music industry, because you're not making money in it, you know, in mm-hmm. the beginning. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time for you actually are able to live off of what you enjoy doing. So what sustains you is that passion mm-hmm. for it. And I don't think if we weren't passionate about it, we wouldn't have done it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So talk to me then about high school going into college. Now you're starting to form your own vision independently. And how did that start to manifest?
Right. So as children, let's say in elementary school, my brothers and I were a group. But as we got older into our teens, you know, we kind of just phased out of that. We were kind of doing our own thing musically. My brothers were interested in rapping, and I was interested in singing. I suppose we still could have done the group thing, but I think, you know, the priority, at least for my dad, was working with some of the more established artists. He also had, you know, his companies and, you know, promoting concerts and things like that. So he had to be more serious about the business side, whereas we were more of a hobby. So as we got into middle school and high school, you know, I joined the choirs because it was a way for me to constantly practice vocally and improve my range and to learn a little bit about music theory and all that kind of stuff. So it was a good for me, which I enjoyed doing. I remember, interesting enough, when I was in middle school, I remember recruiting other kids to kind of join my you know, pseudo music management company, which was under, which I kind of put together under my dad's company. And, you know, my goal was to help other artists, other kids understand music, a music career, and try to do that. Mind you, though, like, you know, this has always been a passion. You know, we've gone through periods where, you know, this passion was not producing well for our family, and, you know, we definitely struggled a bit financially, and it was definitely kind of ups and downs in our kind of socioeconomic status, you know, which is representative of the music industry and entertainment as a whole, where, you know, there might be consistent work, and then there's, you know, a dry spell of things, especially when that's, you know, from a smaller market like Cleveland, Ohio. You know, we were still passionate about it, and my dad continued to pursue entertainment, not only in music, but also film and TV, in terms of projects. And I kind of modeled that through my work, not work, but through my exposure from that. I tried to, you know, build together my own music projects, if you will, with other students. So it was really funny. I look back because I was nowhere near being a music manager, but I thought myself was out there recruiting artists. When I was in high school, I ended up working actually for a modeling agency as a recruiter. And, you know, some of that skill came from, you know, recruiting and vetting musicians and kind of talent when I was in middle school.
Yeah. And I love it too, because again, it shows, you know, your early entrepreneurial spirit, maybe inherited also from your dad, but also this desire to be of service. And that's something that I keep hearing over and over, especially with innovators and entrepreneurs in the music biz. It's like, how do I help others achieve their goals?
Right.
You know, how can I contribute? So obviously that was something for you at a pretty young age, because, you know, again, you would have had every right to be very self-centered and narcissistic during that time, you know, because you had talent and you were trying to pursue a career. So I love it that you were already thinking of, you know, how you could contribute to other people's music career goals, et cetera. So continue us on the journey. So did you go to college for music? What happened?
Since my last year of high school, again, still very interested in the arts. At this point, I had, you know, spent 4 years in high school. Most of those years I was in choir as well as the drama club. So I was doing musical theater, which was the combination of two of my favorite arts, performing arts, which is acting and singing. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely loved it. And I was in a number of productions in our high school. I was also working outside of our high school in more community-oriented theater and music projects. At some point, I don't quite remember how this happened, but I ended up in the formation of a boy band with another teenager in Cleveland area, and then three from Detroit. And it was put together by a member of a former boy band that had broken up. So we were just kind of this boy band, kind of rehearsing cover songs and dancing and all that kind of stuff. But I wasn't really passionate about it. I felt that at the time I had more training vocally than a lot of the others in our group. So it wasn't really a passion for me. So we didn't go anywhere with it. Ultimately, I decided I wanted to move to Los Angeles, pursue a solo career as a musician and an actor. I really, you know, I looked at Will Smith as a great example of a musician who also did acting and did both pretty well, and you know, was generally, you know, had a good brand as an entertainer and a person. So I looked at that as a kind of a role model in terms of what I was interested in doing when I came here. So I graduated high school. I packed up my bags and I pretty much moved here. I was homeless. I was unemployed and I had no connections, but I got a one-way ticket on Southwest Airlines on Craigslist because someone was selling their Rapid Rewards certificate at the time, which was basically a free flight. Bought it on Craigslist and just came out here. Flew into Burbank on December 4th, 2003, and started from the bottom.
Wow, that's a hell of a story. So you're in LA now. What?
Well, prior to coming to LA, I had found also on Craigslist someone who was seeking a personal assistant. Mm-hmm. And it was a live-in position. So if you got the gig, you'd be living at this person's house along with some of the other staff that worked for this person. This person was a Emmy Award-winning director and music video producer, and I thought this is great. This would get me kind of in the entertainment industry. You know, I didn't know much about the actual business. I thought I knew some stuff, but I didn't know anywhere near as what I know now. I thought, okay, well, great. I'll go in. I'll apply for this job. I'll get the job, and I'll have a place to live. Very naive, thinking, you know, coming from 18 years old, coming from Cleveland, not understanding that there's probably 200 other people in Los Angeles who've been here for some time applying for the same job, who probably have experience as a personal assistant, who would understand the city landscape and how to navigate Los Angeles. I had never driven in Los Angeles. I've only been here one time before, and I was to visit colleges because I did want to go to, you know, UCLA here. So, but I decided to take the leap, and I convinced the guy to pick me up from Burbank Airport with my bags and my computer in a box, and the computer monitor, CTR tower, and all that stuff. And went back to his office and did the interview. You know, I can see on his desk he had a stack of resumes and headshots from people who are kind of like, you know, aspiring talent, but also doing personal assistant jobs. And I thought, you know, I got to get this job. I mean, if I don't get this job, then I had a backup plan in terms of where I was going to sleep that night. And that was some sketchy listing on Craigslist from some woman renting her couch in her living room that I had arranged as a backup plan if I didn't get the job. And then I only had $400 in cash and $200 on a starter kind of secured credit card. And that was, you know, that's all I had. So I was like, you know, I got to make this work. $600 and my computer, some clothes, and a mission. So I can tell you, with that type of back against the wall, like, you would really, you know, your abilities really enhance. So I got the job, which was crazy. You know, of all the people, me with no understanding of how to get to an agency or a label, you know, to run an errand for my boss, compared to other people who've been personal assistants to other established entertainment professionals. I had a binder that I still have to this day, and I've used many, many times for jobs. This binder is full of letters of recommendations, certificates of appreciation, awards, scholarship, anything that I've accomplished in my life academically and socially via, you know, I was in 26 student groups in high school. I was a volunteer. I've done over 10,000 hours of volunteer hours, and I organized a lot of community kind of give back and leadership program things in my high school career. And middle school. So I compiled all that into a binder, and I brought that binder with me to job interviews. And I would say 3 out of 5 jobs that I brought that to, I've gotten, and this was one of them. That binder, I think, made the difference between me having a place to sleep that night, that was a bed, and not. So I got the job. And he asked, well, when do you want to start? I said, well, you already took it from the airport. I've already started. So moved in, and, you know, the rest is history.
Well, let's hear more of that history, because again, I love what you said about when your back is up against the wall. And I don't think people realize like what a gift that is, even though it sounds so counterintuitive, but you know, you hear that time and time again, when you,
right,
need to hustle. Like, it's amazing how creative you will be, how much more you can push yourself, how much more you can achieve when your back is up against the wall. Do you feel
it's
like
in human nature? It's nature. It's the fight or flight nature.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. I had to pretty much fight for this job, and that meant presenting myself, you know, completely up against the odds. You know, I never worked in the entertainment industry legitimately, especially not in Los Angeles, nor did I know that I have a network here that I could pipe into, nor did I know how to get around to run errands or to help to do anything. But you know, I had a set of skills that I was able to demonstrate, communication skills, time management skills, prioritizing, things that I was able to demonstrate from my efforts in high school, and running student groups, not just one, but multiple student groups at the same time, maintaining a good academic standing, being highly engaged in the community as well, and demonstrating all of that through a binder full of awards and recommendations all the way up to the governor of Ohio. So that, I think, spoke for itself of my character and my capabilities in terms of being able to learn quickly and apply certain skills to a challenge. And that's been this consistent theme of my career as a professional and in academia, is not taking, not being afraid of a challenge and being able to grow very quickly and learn very quickly within a role.
Yeah. And I also think that it's a really good reminder to you of who you are, what you can accomplish, what you're bringing to the table, because I think especially in LA, there's so much, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, you're only as good as your next project.
Right.
So that there's so much of a sort of beat down of like, yeah, who cares who you are? And the fact that you had this with you and to this day, you still have it with you is like, yeah, but I believe
it's important.
I know who I am,
it's,
and I believe who I am. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a self, you're right. I mean, you have this, you know, anyone who's anyone in any industry is, you know, is in LA and, or associated with someone in LA. So you kind of feel, you know, a lot of the best and the brightest, you know, come here to pursue careers, not only in entertainment, but in traditional, industries. So you feel that the competition is very, very high. I remember going on my first audition. When I got here, it was for for making the band. The line was down the street. It was, I believe the audition was at the Knitting Factory on Sunset, which is no longer there. I, you know, went in and I thought, you know, I felt that I was a strong vocalist based on my experience back in Cleveland, which I'm sure a lot of people come here with that same, like, oh, I'm the best one that I know of and where I'm from. So I can go and pursue this in Los Angeles. And you realize very quickly that there are much more talented people here vying for the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you give up. It doesn't mean you stop. You keep practicing, you keep rehearsing, you keep making yourself better. You know, and there's an opportunity will come, but those are reality checks that you have to get, and it's best to get them as quickly as possible so that you can pivot your mindset and understand that you know, you have to want to do this, because of not only are you dealing with the challenge of trying to find opportunities, and then once you find them, competing with others who are just as good as or better than you, but also balancing all of that with the fact that you're not making much money or any at all, and you're trying to sustain yourself while pursuing this passion as a career. But those things are all possible, and I believe they are, which is why I came out here to do it, and which is why I did it until I pivoted into the business side, which we'll talk about momentarily. It was also really fun. I think what made it fun for me and what helped me a lot, and I think this is important for a lot of the younger creators, is that I've surrounded myself by other younger creators. You know, I had a community of aspiring models and dancers and actors, and we would support each other. I would go to these small, you know, plays off of, you know, off of Sunset Boulevard in the kind of the Playhouse district of Strip in Hollywood, and I would go and support them by seeing their plays, their impromptu comedy shows. You know, because I have friends who wanted to be comedians, I would go and watch my friends and dance performances at an event called Carnival, which was a monthly dance showcase of some top dancers and choreographers. I would watch, you know, my other friends' small gigs at, you know, at clubs and bars, and so we'd go and support each other. And that community was so important. Social media was super early back then. I mean, I moved here in 2003. Facebook had just began that year. MySpace had, you know, just came out. So you know, it was actually, I think Facebook was out. Yeah, I don't think so, but MySpace was. And but it was a very, very, there was no social media. Social was actually meeting people in person and building community, because there was, you know, weren't really groups. And we had AIM and the ability to kind of, you know, instant message, but we were definitely very supportive, and it was great. It was an interesting time for me as an aspiring teenager in Los Angeles for the first time, on my own for the first time. The second flight ever in my life was actually coming to Los Angeles. It was also the first flight I did in my life, which I came out a few months before I moved here to visit colleges, and then I suppose that would be the third flight, because I'd had my flight back to Cleveland and then flight back to LA when I moved here December 4th. I celebrate December 4th every year. This will be the 15th year, so I'm going to celebrate it even more. I think it's important to build milestones from these kind of life transitions. And every year I celebrate December 4th, 2003, which is when I moved here. And I try to reflect on what I've accomplished in the year, since the year, you know, since the last milestone, which would be the previous year.
I'm wondering if you can talk to us now about the transition from a personal assistant supporting somebody else's career, goals, dreams, vision, et cetera, to really becoming the entrepreneur, because I think a lot of people come to LA with the big dreams. They, you know, need money. They get into an assistant position and it takes over and it becomes right. Comfortable and it becomes easier. And I mean, I'm similar to you. I basically got a personal assistant job and a bartending gig like as soon as I got to LA. And I found myself like very much sort of subsumed with my boss's career and their goals and their vision, because that's what I was being paid for. And it became difficult for me to kind of separate myself from that. And again, there's nothing to do with them. They're just doing their jobs. They're doing what they're supposed to do, which is pursue their vision. But I just found I was so kind of intimidated and overwhelmed by it that it was harder for me to sort of extricate myself or keep my own dreams.
Well, you know, I wasn't a personal assistant for long. So I didn't have that experience where I felt that I took the job because it was a transitional step for me from coming to Cleveland to Los Angeles. This was a job that paid very, 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 very little. It was a weekly stipend, if you will. But the most important to me is that there was a place for me to live.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it was a place to live. So I would think, I'm interested to hear this, because I would think that you would have felt even more obligated to kind of put your time in. So tell me about that.
Well, no, I mean, I did, you know, I was doing my tasks, but the person that I worked for just wasn't, it didn't work out. The person had some challenges that made it difficult to be their assistant. So it ultimately didn't work out. I decided I wanted to, you know, I wasn't looking to be an assistant. I was looking for an opportunity to help me get to Los Angeles, and this was one of them. I was willing and able to be a great personal assistant, but it just didn't work out because of the person's personality and living with someone that you're working with who has a personality that is very difficult is not healthy or good for a social or working relationship. So I decided to look for another job. And I found a job as a service manager for a new restaurant that was opening up in Sherman Oaks, Galleria. And I also found a roommate situation to go out and rent and you know, share an apartment in Sherman Oaks. So I took that job. I previously worked in food service in Ohio at an amusement park for a number of years. So working in the restaurant industry. It was a bar/restaurant, and I worked there. It was fun. That's where I actually built my first social network of friends here, because there were other aspiring fill-in-the-blanks who are servers and hosts and bartenders and barbacks and, you know, everyone. And some of them are doing amazing work now as actors and musicians and models. And so we all kind of started in this place and moved. They came in from all over the country, Chicago and Dallas and Minnesota. I remember some of my various coworkers. So it was really fun. You had this kind of this young staff of aspiring something to all work at this fun kind of Mexican food restaurant slash bar, and you know, we all have our stories about our pursuit of our careers, and we go out and support each other. So I was really happy I took that, made that transition, because now I found a community that was helpful to me. That's also when the transition began of me moving towards business, because I was a manager, which I was a manager of the restaurant, which I came from being a manager at food service restaurants at Music Parks in Cleveland, which is why I got the job. But since a lot of my team members or my staff were aspiring artists, they would come to me about questions about their career or just guidance or direction, because I was also their manager and I was also an aspiring artist. So I would end up kind of being their pseudo guidance counselor, if you will, in regards to the music business, and saying, oh, you should do this or don't do this or consider this if you're going to make that decision. So I started providing guidance, just very basic guidance and support. And I was an easy person to talk to and to run ideas by. And I gave very thorough, comprehensive opinions, and was a very logical thinker. And I would, but also a very compassionate person. So I was able to balance that in terms of my advice. So that's when it began. It's really just starting to give advice to my friends who were also aspiring something. I also began my taking courses in community college. I originally wanted to go to UCLA. That was my goal in high school. I applied to UCLA. I got rejected from UCLA. It's always interesting to tell that story because I'm an instructor at UCLA. I teach a class that I developed. You know, I got rejected from UCLA. I still wanted to come to LA, which I did. I decided to go to community college, which had a special program that if you completed it, gave you priority admission consideration for the UC system as well as USC. I did the program, completed it with honors, got accepted to USC, Berkeley, and UCLA, and chose UCLA as a transfer student. In the meantime, I was working full-time and going to school full-time and not able to go on auditions, so I was becoming less and less of an aspiring artist, but I was also becoming more and more of support system to other artists. And through my education, which was a sociology major and double major in communications at UCLA, I had a certain set of skills, I believe, that just helped me with kind of manager skills as an artist manager. Eventually, I transferred to UCLA. At some point, I got involved in doing club events, promoting and organizing nightclub events. Got really, really, really good at it, and that grew into much more substantial, celebrity-oriented, you know, media-covered PR events, and I used to book DJs for these events. And eventually, my senior year at UCLA, so several of the DJs that I used to book asked me to manage them. I hadn't officially managed anyone up until that point. I had been providing guidance and sort of manager-style tasks up to that point by making introductions. I had built a strong network of entertainment industry people because they were my clients at my club events. I was also involved in just, you know, outside projects and film and TV. I was interested in being a producer. So I just had a really great network of people, and I would try to make introductions and always trying to connect people together and help myself by helping them, making introductions, you know, helping with synergies and helping to kind of vet opportunities. Eventually, my senior year at UCLA, I launched my first artist management company, which managed DJs. Some of those DJs were also interested in being producers. So I eventually launched an independent record label and publishing company to help my DJs slash producers work with artists and top liners. And when I graduated UCLA, I had got a job as a head of marketing of a retail chain. And I pitched to the owner to launch a music division within the company, which I ended up founding and being the general manager of. And that included, you know, online, you know, music store, music selling CDs in our retail stores. So I interfaced with major labels in terms of distribution, promoted artists and videos and our music videos and our TVs in our stores, sponsored artists and produced concerts in our malls and talent searches and product placement and music videos, and helped artists build merch programs, licensing, all that stuff I did in my day job. But I was also running at that point a small artist management company, which had grown to 6 managers with 2 dozen acts across the country, and an independent label, independent publishing company, and also had a film and TV licensing division. So I was juggling a lot of projects, a day job and small music companies with a growing roster and a growing team of professionals working with me and licensing and promotions and a choreographer and a tour manager and all these different people trying to be a part of what I was building. And it all happened organically. It wasn't quite planned. It was one thing happened because another thing happened. I looked at opportunities and was able to leverage opportunities and build relationships between, you know, kind of, or bridge relationships between different opportunities to further my career and to further my goals, which was to basically my career, my goals was helping other artists or helping artists. At that point, I had pretty much resigned from pursuing music as an artist myself. I enjoyed promoting and helping build careers of my roster, which was a diverse roster, like I said, from DJs in the beginning to then now live acts and songwriters and music producers and rappers and bands, and very diverse. So
let me jump in real quick and ask you a question. What was your degree from UCLA?
So UCLA, I double majored in sociology and communication studies. Ultimately, my degree was sociology. I also had I went to Los Angeles Valley College and I got an AA there before I went to UCLA.
Okay, so it's really interesting because, again, your degree wasn't in business, it wasn't in marketing, it wasn't in the music business, and yet you were able to achieve all of these businesses, all of these projects. Do you feel that it's necessary nowadays for people to have a music business degree or a business degree to achieve this? Because that's sort of a debate that I'm always interested in hearing about.
Well, I don't think it's necessary to have a business degree. I think it's necessary to have skill sets that lend well in business in terms of the fundamental principles of running a business. That doesn't mean you have to have a degree in business or even an MBA. Now, that's helpful, of course, because you're focusing and studying in an academic setting these fundamental principles of business management and team building, all this stuff. But no, I don't think you need a business degree. Now, I've developed a class on music industry entrepreneurship, which is applying fundamental principles of entrepreneurship to the music industry. And I think that goes a little bit further, or maybe it's a little bit, it's more complementary to business. I don't think it's 100% necessary that you have a business degree. I think it's helpful. You know, when I was at UCLA, we didn't have a music industry program. We do now. And before me, there was no music business. In terms of music entrepreneurship course, I developed it and I pitched it to the school based on my experience working with a number of I worked on the creative side for a number of years, but then I obviously pivoted to the tech side, which is where I'm at now, and music tech and music rights and copyrights and royalties and all that stuff. So, you know, I pitched a course to UCLA that was geared, actually first it was geared towards computer science majors and engineers to help them understand music business, because those are the ones building all the apps. And I started a consulting firm working with music tech startups, and I've worked with over 24 now, helping them get their apps licensed and help them navigate the complexities of music licensing and the new media space, which was just a, you know, kind of a new division. Even in labels, didn't even know how to license certain apps. There was no statutory or compulsory license, no statutory rates or compulsory license for a lot of the new type of media companies, which is why we're dealing with a lot of issues now around streaming and digital. But, you know, I had launched a business building go-to-market strategies for music tech startups, and then evolved into more of the licensing and rights side and royalty accounting after I got a master's degree in music industry entrepreneurship. I'm sorry, in music industry administration. But I focused really on the entrepreneurship piece because I've always had been an entrepreneur. When I was in high school, I was an entrepreneur. I had a business building shopping trips for our community and took people from Ohio to New York to go to shopping trips and would make money that way. So I've always been an entrepreneur. I always had skills of building teams, setting strategies, setting goals, promoting and selling things. That's always been skills of mine. In high school, I was in a program called DECA, which was a marketing program, and I competed in DECA competitions. I won first place in our district and then top 10 in our state. So I've always been involved in leadership positions. I was in a number of leadership camps like HOBE, which is the Hugh O'Brien Youth Leadership Organization, and some other summer camps that were leadership camps I would go to while I was in high school, but they were at colleges. So I always had these principles, these fundamental skills of leadership and entrepreneurship. It's just that I didn't have an industry to apply it to until I moved to Los Angeles. So I've applied those things and have improved those things over my nearly 15 years here. And through that, I've built a number of businesses here in Los Angeles. You know, I've had, you know, failures and I've had some successes. And that's a part of being a serial entrepreneur. So I teach that now in my course at UCLA, but I'm also working on an online course to try to help others who reach out to me via my social media or website. Last year, I did a free multi-city masterclass called the Music Industry Entrepreneurship Masterclass. I did it in Brooklyn, Cleveland, Oakland, and Los Angeles, and it was free. Anyone can come. They were all packed. And I did a 4-hour masterclass on entrepreneurship, and I also wrote an ebook on this stuff. So, you know, all
what's
about
the title of
knowledge.
The ebook?
So I have an ebook called The DIY Musician Starter Guide to Being Your Own Label and Publisher. It's been, I actually wrote it and last year for Creative Future, which is an advocacy organization. And a number of artists and managers as well have downloaded it, and they've reached out to me and said, "This is a thank you so much for writing this. It's helped me so much in terms of organizing my own business as a music creator and a copyright owner." And it's a step-by-step guide to building your own, to developing your own music company, and to make sure you understand how you get paid, how you collect your royalties. And, you know, I built software for this now, which is Tune Registry, and also built the Royalty Claim, which is a search engine for unclaimed music royalties. And as I learn more and more and more about the music industry and about the ways in which music is licensed globally and how royalties flow, which is my interest and passion now, I built tools around these issues and try to share that knowledge through resources like blog posts and ebooks and webinars and seminars and courses.
So I'm wondering, since we're running out of time, if just as the last question, what keeps you, talk a little bit just about the what you see for the music landscape going forward, because it's really exciting. And what keeps you on top of it, if you can possibly tell us that?
Well, I'm trying to ride along with the digital transformation of the music industry, which has been happening for the last 20 years now, actually. So it's not something that's new, but it's still a transformation. Like, we have the Music Modernization Act, which is on its way towards being a law, which will transform or change the way in which we license digital mechanical rights in the U.S., as well as, you know, a number of other achievements, including bringing pre-1972 recordings under federal copyright protection, and allocating for music producers and engineers, you know, a right to digital radio royalties. So there are a lot of things that's still happening in terms of the evolution, the digital media or the digital music era. What I'm super excited about now, in addition to trying to provide solutions to make it better for DIY musicians as well as small to medium-sized rights holders to participate in all this stuff, and that's what Tune Registry does. But I'm also excited about what's happening in the next wave of new frontier tech, and that's blockchain and artificial intelligence and virtual reality and machine learning and augmented reality. And all of these things, there's tech founders working on projects right now on these types of applications within the music industry. And I've been able to experience a number of them via demos and sitting in on their panels at conferences or their presentations at conferences, and just seeing, you know, where the industry is headed in terms of new technology. There's always a resistance to innovation, and that's generally those who have been comfortable with how things run and who the gatekeepers are. And there's always a faction of rebels saying, that's fine, but we're still going to make this more accessible and democratized. And, you know, that's what's happening right now with a lot of some founders that I'm aware of.
That's super exciting. And I love the fact, too, that they obviously understand, and I don't think I'm being biased here, but they obviously understand how essential music is, and that it's not going away anytime soon. And therefore, it needs to be an integral part of tech going forward in our sort of day-to-day interactive future. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really exciting to me because I'm looking at now, you know, I transition, and it's really great. If I look at my career, one day I'll do this. I'll sit down and kind of map out how I've pivoted my focus within the music industry over, you know, since I was 5 years old, since I was, you know, standing in a corner because I hit the note wrong in my three-part harmony with my brothers, to what I'm doing now, which is speaking at conferences and being cited in publications like Rolling Stone and Pitchfork and Billboard, and writing ebooks and teaching classes and helping founders from around the world bring their technology to market, and helping rights holders understand how to license their content to new media. It's a totally different world. And it's exciting, and I see it continuing to evolve, not only because there's new technology, but also because of the industry we're now spreading out into more globalization in terms of, and that's a good thing, in terms of being able to communicate and engage with other territories. There's a lot of quote-unquote developing countries and territories that are building more established entertainment ecosystems, and music is a part of that. And we see from India and Middle East and South Africa, other parts of Africa as well, building, you know, relationships with major multinational music companies, entertainment companies. Now, some of that still has a long way to go in terms of creator rights, in terms of who owns the rights and how people are paid. But we do see that they're starting to build foundations for innovation and for commercialization of music and entertainment. And I think that's the exciting next phase. That's the kind of music 2020 that's on its way.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And you heard it here first, people. So take note, Dave Bogan told you first. So how do people find you? Can you just drop your website,
sure,
social media?
So I'm all about branding. So it's consistent everywhere. So it's just Dave Bogan Music. My social media is at Dave Bogan Music. So DaeBogan Music. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Dave Bogan Music. I'm also pretty engaged on LinkedIn. You know, you can go to my website, DaveBoganMusic.com. As far as Tune Registry, which is the, you know, my company, you can go to TuneRegistry.com, which is TuneRegistry.com. And again, that's the same thing on social media. If you're an entrepreneur out there working on a music tech startup and you need some support or help or guidance in that respect, I have my small consultancy where I take on a few clients at a time called Rights Department. And so you can go to RightsDepartment.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, Day. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Special thanks to Day for joining us on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job, and taking time out of his insanely busy schedule, as most of my guests have, to share with us about his really creative and unique career trajectory and all of his music industry businesses that he, I don't know again how he sleeps or eats or has free time, but again, just really exciting to hear where we are all headed. So I urge you to follow Day, and so you can be on top of where exactly this music industry is going in terms of tech and innovation. So it's Dae Bogan Music, Daebogan Music. So this ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, El Ariel. We can be found at musicjobswithanspodcast.com. We're also on social media at musicjobspodcast. And you can find me on my website, lariel-music.com. That's lariel-music.com. I'm also on social media at lariel-music. So drop me a line, say hi, and follow me, and I'll follow you back. Okay, I hope everyone has a wonderful week. Keep on trucking. And remember, we are going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you dare give up.